Merħba għal program Min Għajnejn Barranin fejn jiena Khaled Fitz niltaqa u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Dan huwa r-ritorn ta' Min Għajnejn Barranin. Ftit tistenilu kont għamilt sensiela ta' programmi ta' Min Għajnejn Barranin meta kont kontributur ta' Campus 103.7 lura fl-2015. Bej wieħed u ieħor. U jiena u r-reġija tal-istazzjon iddeċidejna li wasal iż-żmien li nġib lura nirritornaw biex nesploraw Malta minn għajnejn barranin permezz ta' sensiela ġdida. U għalhekk ninsab hawnhekk u għandi pjaċir kbir li għandi lista ta' nies minn kull rokna tad-dinja li llum jgħixu pajjiżna jew li jżuru pajjiżna sikwit biex nisimgħu minn għandhom l-opinjoni tagħhom dwar pajjiżna u nisimgħu wkoll xi ftit dwar pajjiżhom, nitgħallmu xi ftit dwar dan ukoll. L-ewwel programm ħaniftaħ koppja minn mill-pajjiż ġar tagħna, mill-Italja u fil-fatt nagħti merħba. So I'm going to be speaking in English now. We could do it in Italian, but my Italian is very broken and we'll do it in English and everybody will be able to understand us. Welcome, Fabrizio Endirene.
Oh, thank you very much. Buongiorno campus. Grazie ħafna per l'opportunità.
There we go.
Niet kelftit Malti, eh? That's all I can say.
But you've got the accent pinned down as well. And Fabrizio, so it's Fabrizio Foni.
Yes.
And Irene Stefanelli.
Irene Incarico.
Incarico.
Yes, okay. Incarico Stefanelli.
So it's a double surname.
Yes, it's very a double modest surname. My mother and my father's one.
There we go. Okay.
Thanks fantastic for welcoming us.
A pleasure. It's a great pleasure to have you. Also, you're based, you both teach here at the university. The two of you are married, right? How long have you been married?
Since forever. There were dinosaurs roaming around Italy at the time we met. It was like 2002 or something similar.
Okay. We married in 2010.
Okay, you married in 2010, but you met in 2002.
Yes, and actually, fun fact, we married twice.
Oh, how interesting.
I'm one of the few persons who married twice the same man, because first we got married, not really married, but we have a civil union done in Belgium. Mm-hmm. It wasn't recognized yet by Italy, so the easiest option to be officially married was to do...
To get also married in Italy.
The big thing.
Okay.
And with a big white wedding dress, yes, after so many years together. That was so silly and funny.
So, Irene, what do you do? You're a teacher. Could you explain to us your career?
This is going to take a long time.
It's very interesting. I mean, there's music involved, there's teaching... Give us a bit of an explanation.
My main big full-time job is being a teacher and a middle leader in a local private school where I teach French. I take care of the international program of this school. Mm-hmm. And I also teach storytelling, story creation and other little things. It's a primary school, so I'm talking about children from 5 till 10 years old. Mm-hmm. This is my morning identity, where I am Miss Irene, or okay, Miss Irene, or Miss Irene, according to the language.
Indeed, and let me stop you for a second. You teach lots of kids, and nowadays Malta is much more cosmopolitan than it was 10 years ago. So I'm assuming there's many different nationalities, not just Maltese kids?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Taking care of the international program, mostly my job is catering and designing programs for foreign kids and helping families settling down as well. Mm-hmm. And we have pupils from, I like to say, from the 7 continents, even though I've never had a pupil from Antarctica.
So you also teach here at university?
Yes, I teach here at university as a part-timer.
I teach
social history of Italian music and songs.
Okay.
I also teach poetry, modern and contemporary poetry. And I also teach literature of the Italian language origins from the very early Middle Ages.
Oh, wow, how exciting.
So it's very varied, because my studies have been quite hectic. Okay. I first studied philology of the Middle Ages, and then I moved towards very contemporary topics such as cyberpunk and this type of genre.
Okay. So. And you also have a big interest in music. You are actually a DJ. So on the weekends, most of the time, but even in the evenings, one can find you at some of Malta's hottest night spots.
I have always been a DJ. So yeah. I, more than a work or a hobby, I considered one of my personalities, like one of my identities. Because
And you do the whole mixing, vinyl, you know, yes. records and everything. You're one of the old school DJs.
I am an old school DJ. Mm-hmm. Of course, nowadays it's less and less easy to find turntables in clubs. So unless I want to carry my my own weight in equipment with me to the club, I have to go digital.
Okay.
So I'm not very happy about it because I'm the type of person who likes to collect records, rarities, promos, and so on.
But if we had to pin you down as a genre, what kind of music could you offer me for my birthday party?
I would go for house music, but the house music which is contaminated with Afro and tribal and exotic word sounds.
But I've also seen advertisements where you've DJed at retro parties where you played Italo disco.
Yes. So I recognize only two types of music.
Okay.
The one I like and the one I don't like.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move to Fabrizio. Tell us a little bit about your role here at the University of Malta.
Well, I have been working here for more than 10 years. I moved to Malta in late September 2013. And I was appointed within the Department of Italian because they needed someone who could teach, of course, Italian language, literature, but also popular culture. In particular, film, because I also teach within an MA in film studies, which was launched in 2016.
Film studies?
Yes.
Okay, and that's part of the Department of Italian or in...
Well, administratively speaking, it stems from the Department of Italian, but it's an autonomous entity. It's a program which is entirely taught in English.
Okay.
And about film, both theory and practice.
And do you also have other things, like Irene has the DJing, strings to your bow?
Let's say that in many cases, not always, because, for example, when I lecture on literature of the Middle Ages or other topics, in that case, I try to not to tackle things that are my main passions, because I want to give the very basics to students. But in many cases, my work coincides with my hobby, because I have always been fond of popular culture, and in particular, horror, gothic, and science fiction.
Okay.
So I designed a unit entitled Italia Occulta, offered to honor students about folklore, myth, magic, paganism in Italian culture.
And this just reminds me of some of those obscure Italian movies from the 70s, like Bava, the director, that you would see late at night channels at night when I'm switching between Colpo Grosso. I'm sorry, I mean, when I'm switching between football matches.
I think everyone in Malta knows more Colpo Grosso than Bava.
Yeah.
But
there would be some weird movie, like with vampires. And
stuff. Dario Argento, Mario Bava, Riccardo Fred. So, and very rewardingly, because it was extremely rewarding, last year, I had the chance to supervise a beautifully crafted MA thesis about Mario Bava.
Okay, he's one of the most famous directors of these giallo.
Yeah, he was a maestro. He could direct wonderful low-budget films.
And for those who don't know, these directors, their best work is respected all around the world, you know, in Hollywood, in the UK.
The most interesting aspect about these films is that generally company used to produce these works only because they wanted to emulate foreign genres. Something like In the UK there are companies such as Hammer that are making horror films, you know, featuring Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and the like.
Yes.
So let's try to do the same, mm-hmm. but with a very, very, very low budget.
Okay.
So they were
like spaghetti westerns.
Yes, more or less
the equivalent.
And they have something in common because many directors and actors, both in the horror genre and the spaghetti westerns, but I have to say also in Sword and Sorcery.
Of course.
And Sword and Sandal.
Yes.
And even Thriller, Adventure. They used to go under pseudonyms.
Ah.
Anglophone pseudonyms. Because they thought that this way they would look more appealing.
Yes, on the poster.
To the Italian audiences, but also abroad.
Abroad.
Sergio Leone originally used to direct this film under the name of Bob Robertson.
Oh, there you go. Absolutely. And the classic example is, of course, Bud Spencer and Terence Hill, who were totally Italian names, but they changed those names to be more appealing to the international audiences.
Yeah, but in particular, thriller and horror genres, they influenced directors such as Joe Dante. Tim Burton's most favorite film is La Maschera del Demonio, Black Sunday. A 1960 film by Mario Bava.
There you go. Because it turned out that although they started off as sort of trying to copy American and British movies, they ended up creating some masterpieces. That are respected. That's fantastic.
But they were not supposed to be like that.
To conclude on this point, I think there was a tribute to them in what's his name's last movie?
Tarantino's
last movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There's a lot of references to these European movies because he was influenced by a lot of these.
That film is a labor of love.
In Europe.
It's a tribute, yes.
Yeah. So this is Fabrizio Foni and what you're interested in. And we spoke to Irene. So you're Italians in Malta. Let's hear a piece of music. I asked you to prepare maybe to choose a piece of music you think symbolizes Italy. That like if I was somebody who had never heard of Italy and doesn't know anything about Italy, and I've met you the first time, and I ask you, what's Italian music like? Give me an introduction to Italy via music.
Well, first of all, I would miserably fail because I find it almost impossible to pinpoint just one song which could aptly represent Italian culture, because it's so varied that you cannot find something that really encompasses everything, all things Italian.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to choose one song, not because of its lyrics, but because of its sound, because something that could represent a more neglected, perhaps, side of Italian culture, I would go for something countercultural, something a bit more underground. And I would definitely opt for an Italian band, a now legendary Italian band called CCCP. The spelling would be CCCP, because it was at the time, early 80s, a reference to Soviet Union. And older lyrics, not all, but most of the lyrics are quite controversial. And I would go for a song called Curami, Heal Me.
Now, I'm going to have to make this warning to all my guests, especially the ones whose language I don't understand. Now, I know a bit of Italian. I learned it at school, learned it from television. So I'll know if there's going to be rude words in this. Are there going to be rude words?
No.
Good.
No.
Just imagine.
No, in this case, there's nothing rude.
But later in the series, when I'm interviewing somebody from some place, they'll probably try and trick me and say, oh, no, it has no rude
words. In this case, there are no F words. There are no swear words, no blasphemies.
I'll have to trust people.
The overall sound might, you know, appear a bit odd.
Okay.
Because it was an explicitly punk band, a self-professed punk band, which was merging the typical punk style with something more electronic.
Okay.
And with some sounds from Italian traditional music.
How interesting. So what's the song called?
Curami.
cura,
which would be heal me.
So curami by CCCP, or as they would, as you would call them in Italian,
CCCP.
Let's hear it, and we'll return in a few minutes to continue our conversation with Fabrizio and Irene from Italy during this edition of Minainein Barani. We're back. So that was a song suggested by the couple from Italy, who I am interviewing during this edition of Malta Through International Eyes, Minainein Baranin, here on Campus 103.7. Let's go back to Irene. Irene, which town in Italy are you from?
I am from a small village which is located right by the sea, which is called San Terenzo. Mm. And it is in the province of La Spezia, in the region of Liguria. Even though I have to say that part of my family migrated to Belgium in the past, in the 50s. So I have also spent a lot of my life in the city of Liège,
okay,
in Wallonia. So I sometimes feel that I'm kind of split between Liège and La Spezia, which are two very, very, let's say, industrial cities,
yes,
which have a past.
For the benefit of our listeners, a lot of whom would know Italy, if I'm looking at Lo Stivale Italiano, which part
it's in
of
the north.
The
okay. It's the little arch that connects France to Tuscany.
Okay, so quite
where it's literally, considering this little arch, opposite to Sanremo, the city of the very well-known festival.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
If we draw a line between the two corners of the arch,
yeah,
the two points, we can find San Terenzo and La Spezia, which is the main city, and it is in the north.
And La Spezia, is it a port?
Yes.
Town? Yes.
It is a military and commercial port.
Yes.
It's a city which has been heavily bombarded
during
the Second World War.
Yes.
So it's a city which is now, let's say, a little bit weird, peculiar, looking at it, because it has very, very, very new and freshly built areas and very old parts of the region as well.
Okay. So, keeping in mind the subject of the program, which is comparing life in Malta with life in other countries, what was your life like when you were younger and living in that area of Italy?
If I may say so, it is not that different, because spending my childhood and my teenage in a village which is right in front of the sea, with the beach, with all the little dynamics going on in a village, socially speaking as well, it's not very different from living in a Maltese village. Sometimes even the flora or the fauna that you can see around might look similar. Because we are still in the Mediterranean area, and Liguria, even though it's located in the north, it doesn't look like other northern Italian areas. It has a more southern look. It has a very, very specific topography and orography with villages in front of the sea and mountains at the back. So you have a very islandish, island-like vibe in the villages, and then the landscape changes abruptly.
Okay.
Right at the back of the villages.
But you spent some time in Belgium as well.
Yes, I have to ask you
about that. What was life like living in Belgium? How old were you?
We have spent 6 years in Belgium right before moving to
both
Malta.
Of you. Okay.
Yes, both of us. We used to live in Belgium. So actually our change from another country to Malta happened from Belgium, from the city of Liège, in the French-speaking part.
The weather itself is quite different, I'd say.
So let me ask Fabrizio, where are you from originally?
I'm from Siena, not so far from Florence in Tuscany.
Oh, Siena, where they have the Palio.
Yes.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful area.
That, from that point of view, the typical inhabitants of Siena are as crazy as the Maltese when it comes to the festa.
Okay, for their activity, their cultural.
So it doesn't feel that different from that point of view.
Yeah, and your childhood was spent, I would say, in the 70s or 80s.
Early 80s.
So we'd be watching the same television, probably, you and us. But any other differences, maybe, or
we can relate
with Malta?
I think in many cases we can really relate to what the Maltese used to watch in the 80s and 90s, because as you were pointing out, we were watching the same programs. So we grew up, you know, not in the same context, but there were many similarities. And very often when we come across some Maltese people who grew up watching the same thing. We end up even singing, you know, some songs that we used to hear, you know, on TV.
Especially signature tunes.
Yes.
All
the cartoons in particular, yes. Anime.
My favorite thing is that whenever I meet an Italian of a certain age, I don't say, hello, how are you? I would say, buona camicia a tutti, which is a reference to the old Maurizio Costanzo advertisement for shirts.
Absolutely.
Which only Italians of a certain age get. Proprio una camicia con I baffi. but not the youngsters, maybe. But yes, these are the things, the common cultural sort of reference points that we have.
If I may say something, here in Malta, you have a feeling which is more international.
Mm.
Already, the fact that two are the languages spoken here makes everything different. Most of the people in my village barely speak proper Italian. They speak the dialect.
Okay.
They have their own references. And very, very, very few persons speak English or, I would say, accept an international point of view. We have to say that Liguria is one of the regions which is considered close-minded, even though it is in the north.
Yeah.
Everyone says that Ligurian people don't like to spend money, don't like to meet new persons coming there. We don't like tourists and so on. So there is an approach which is different. If you look at the landscape, if you look at the houses, there are some villages in Liguria which look a lot like Marsaslok, for example.
Okay.
Even the colors of the boats.
But surely you have the sliding roofs, the slanting roofs for the winter snow, for example.
Yes.
But the houses not always, though.
Not always. But the colors and... if you look at it, you don't see a huge difference. But when you speak to the persons, you find a completely different approach.
Okay. Now, Irene and Fabrizio, when did you first hear, were you aware that Malta existed? How did you know? Did you know anything about Malta before you started considering coming to work here? What was your original thought of Malta?
Well, I grew up thinking of Malta as a legendary place, you know. The crossroads of different cultures.
Because you were interested in
the
history.
Heart of the Mediterranean. Malta has always been, at least in my mind, a sort of magical place. And I had a completely different Malta in my mind.
Of course, in Italy, there's all these references to Malta in like graphic novels, like Corto Maltese, and what was the one you posted on Facebook a couple of days ago with the Maltese cross that isn't exact?
Oh, that is a comic book from a long-standing series, and there was an episode set in Malta about Maltese ghost stories.
Okay. But, I mean, you had these references as well. So, to you, Malta was this mythical place when you were younger.
And I have to say that I found quite a different place, but not the bad way.
Okay.
Because, of course, what you have in your mind is something that you create, you know, looking at postcards or reading, you know, some info or even hearing about the place from other people. But when you're there... you have a different perspective. So you have your own experience of the island, of the country.
Indeed. Irene, what about you? When did you first hear of Malta? What did you think of Malta before then you started this, you know, thinking about
it? I have a silly anecdote about it.
Okay.
Because I work in a primary school.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I heard about Malta, I was in primary school.
Okay.
I was in my first year. And I remember that I already knew how to read. I already knew how to write. It was very, very boring for me to attend the lessons.
Uh-huh.
And there was this beautiful, detailed map of Europe right behind me. So I always turned my head to look at the places. And right in front of my eyes, I had Malta, Gozo, Valletta, all the little details.
Yes.
But it was like... I wasn't sure it was a real place. I was 5 year old, five something. And then in a book that I received for a Christmas or something that was about archaeology, I was very, very, very fond of archaeological sites, I found the temples. So I put together that thing that was right behind my head at school on the wall and those lovely, interesting temples were actually the same thing. So I had this idea that Malta was something like the pyramids okay. or even the very, very, the city of Atlantis, something okay, lost.
Something so, legendary, yeah.
Yeah, something legendary. Okay. Then I grew up and I learned about the British colony and the knights and blah, 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 everything from the books.
So Belgium, you had moved to Belgium as a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was that for reasons of work to teach and...
It was my fault, actually.
Tell us about that.
No, because I had just finished my PhD in Italy, mm-hmm. and I couldn't find anything. I was looking for a job, of course. And
so is that true, that what you hear in the media, whatever, about Italy being a bit depressed when it comes to finding jobs?
Well, I have the impression that now things are slightly changing, but at the time, I'm speaking about, you know, the mid-2000, uh-huh. late 2000, between mid and late 2000, it was quite difficult to land a job in academia.
Okay.
And I got this postdoctoral position in Liège.
Okay.
And so we decided to relocate in the same month. She was still, you know, completing her PhD.
So,
yes.
Okay.
I was completing my PhD. We moved to Belgium together. I was literally taking flights. I mean, hopping on flights once a month, even more, to visit my professor in Italy who didn't like emails. So I had to go personally.
Could you DJ? Did you DJ in Belgium
yes,
as well?
Yes, yes, yes. So I DJed.
It's like an international language, isn't it?
But
like...
actually, DJing is something that you can easily export.
Yeah.
As long as you have the will of doing that.
Did you have to make a massive adjustment maybe to your DJing style or the kind of music you played in Belgium? I wouldn't think it would be a big adjustment from Italy to Malta. It would be quite similar. But or maybe it is. You tell me.
In my life, I had different phases. Mm-hmm. When I started to DJ, I started with techno music when okay. I was very, very young. And then I moved towards house music.
Techno is big in parts of Italy, in Germany.
Yes, and in the 90s, it was a big thing in Italy, especially in the north.
Yes.
Then I moved towards house and, let's say, softer sounds.
Yes.
When we moved to Belgium, I had the opportunity of exploring something completely different, like new wave, gothic music, EBM, a scene which was not that present in Italy.
Okay.
Or it was there, but it was less organized, less interesting.
So you opened your ears and what you heard happening there, you adapted.
I always had an interest. Okay. I like several different types of music. Okay. I have a bit of everything in my collection from the 60s, from Shostakovich to the latest reggaeton. I try to have a bit of everything.
Irene, you're speaking about music. Let's have another musical break. Perhaps a song. It doesn't have to represent Italy, but let's hear an Italian or a song that represents you. To have a little bit of a break before we continue.
I would like to choose a song that represents being in another country, which is named Skopje, and it is by Il Teatro degli Orrori.
Okay.
The title might seem... I mean, more than the title, the name of the band might seem a bit aggressive, but it's completely different.
Skopje is North Macedonia, North Macedonia, right?
Yes, it is.
So is it a reference to that city?
It is the story of a man who leaves his country mm-hmm. and goes to work in Mestre, which mm-hmm. is close to Venice.
Yes.
Which is a not so beautiful
Venice
place.
Is beautiful,
very
Mestre is awful.
Close to the most amazing city in Italy.
When you say Mestre, I think of this shop in Valletta that for many years was like the place you would go to buy compasses, and when you want to become an architect, you would go there and buy all the... It's a surname here in
Yes. Malta. No, Mestre is a town which has also a huge social issue with drugs, and it's an industrial town mm-hmm. which is all but... amazing.
There was even toxic waste.
Oh dear.
Yes. So it's representative.
It's the dark side of Venice.
Exactly. Okay. Uh-huh. And this song tells the story of this man who left his wife and his daughters to go and work in this Mestre town, and tells about this town to her wife, lying completely, saying that it's a beautiful place,
okay,
that the life is going on.
But it's a beautifully desperate track.
But it's a track that says a lot. There is especially a line that says, "Quando il sole infuoca la laguna, io penso a te. When the sun sets fire to the lagoon, I think about you."
Wow.
It's very poetic.
It is.
And also very raw at the same time.
Il Teatro degli Orrori, Skopje is the name of the track. Let's hear it. Un'altra estate poi.
Quieta, così piccola, non piange mai e mi preoccupa lo sguardo assente, i suoi silenzi quando parliamo. Parliamo sempre di te, parliamo sempre di te. Forse teme che tu ti sia scordato di lei, mi tiene il broncio per giorni interi, ma quando parliamo, parliamo sempre di te. Fuori dal grembo del mare un piccolo granchio si sotterra e si addormenta nella sabbia di fango e detersivi, stanco morto. Sulla faccia il sudore del lavoro che percorre l'autostrada a piedi, che si accanisce sul brandy del discount e che si strappa i capelli bianchi. I semafori in fondo al viale sono bottoni di camicia spalancata sul petto. In rivolta questa notte romba musica cupa e discontinua, mi fiorisce in petto un pianoforte sul quale suonano gli amori degli uomini del mondo. Non posso fare a meno di voi.
Non posso fare a meno di voi. Amori degli uomini del mondo. Non posso fare a meno di voi.
Non posso fare a meno di voi.
Amori degli uomini del mondo. Non posso fare.
Quando il sole infuoca la luna.
Campus 103.7, Minainein Baranin, that's the program. Malta through international eyes. My guests today are Irene and Fabrizio from Italy, but they've been resident in Malta for 10 years.
Even more.
Even more. And we've just heard a track from Italy, from Il Teatro degli Orrori, called Scoppie. Were chosen by Irene. It's about an experience of living in a foreign place. Quick question about Maltese. Earlier, Irene made reference to the fact that she can speak some words. She can speak some Maltese. Over the 12 or so years that you've been in Malta,
almost 11.
Did you ever feel the need to learn Maltese?
Well, actually, I think that's almost on a daily basis, I feel the urge, the need to learn some Maltese. Mm-hmm. For the very simple reason that you can live and work in Malta speaking English only. You can cope, definitely, very well. You can get by.
Especially in your job here at university, where all the lectures are taught in English, the textbooks are in English.
In my case, for example, within the MA in Film Studies, yes. I teach in English. But
you
within
teach
the
Italian in English.
But within the Department of Italian all lectures are in Italian.
All right.
It would happen the same in the Department of French. I mean, they have French lectures in French, the same within the Department of Spanish and so on. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that, you know, although you have the two languages here, the Maltese, and rightly so, they tend to convey instinctively their inner feelings in Maltese. Mm-hmm. Because if you are angry, if you are emotional, if you are happy, if you are sad. So I think if you could explain yourself and understand Maltese, explain yourself in Maltese and understand Maltese, that would be an asset to relate more. And unfortunately, so far, I didn't manage to learn Maltese, apart from very few words, especially swear words that I learned from my neighbors or from the street.
Okay.
But, you know, Malta is at the same time big and small. Mm-hmm. And big in the sense that it's an international country. Mm-hmm. And from that point of view, English is more than enough. But Malta is also small and Malta Zaira Unis Marufa. So in that case, speaking Maltese, I think it's, I'm not going to say that it's mandatory, but it's necessary to relate more. And unfortunately, I didn't manage so far.
But you do attend lots of concerts. We've discussed throughout this interview how you're into especially alternative culture. Have you ever come across like a Maltese band singing in Maltese? And have you ever managed to appreciate any Maltese
definitely
music?
Bricuni.
Yeah,
for Bricuni
example.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Even though you don't understand what they're saying as such, or most of what they're saying.
Well, I asked some friends to translate the lyrics.
But you appreciate their stuff.
But I think that's any language. I mean, when it comes to singing, any language can be great.
Can give you emotion.
Yes. So doesn't matter. For example, when I listen to a song in Maltese, it can even be an old traditional song. You appreciate it.
Now, you're in Belgium. You've explained why you went there. You spent 4 or 5 years?
Almost six.
And Liège, was it the city of Liège? Liège is very historic.
We loved Liège at the end of the day.
Okay.
Liège is also called La Cité Ardente.
The burning city.
The burning city because it's very warm, welcoming, and it is a place where ils font la fête.
Party hard all the time.
Okay. So if you had to sort of be given a choice now and say, living in Belgium, living in Malta, would you choose one over the other?
Well, we can actually say what happened a few months ago.
Yes.
I wasn't offered a position in Liège. But I was told that there was an opportunity. I was asked whether I would be interested in apply. And I said no, because I have been living in Malta for all this time. I like the country now. I like my job. I like the place. I like the people. And there's no point in turning back.
Okay.
Once you turn the page, you turn the page.
Okay. So you've really made a home here.
Absolutely. Our life is here now. We have our house, we have our friends.
And our cats.
Cats.
Okay. But there was nothing. The cats are important, yes. Your legendary cats, all named after famous electronic musicians.
Not all of them, not only of one.
Florian Schneider. From
There's even Gay, too.
Yes,
who was the oldest stray on campus.
How many cats do you have?
Four.
One of them came from campus here at university.
Yes, Gay.
Two are coming from campus.
You adopted them. Oh, lovely.
And another one is Giuseppe, written the Maltese way. Our cats are pure Fantastic. Maltese cats.
So you've totally integrated. Yeah. That's really wonderful. But just to conclude about Belgium, there was nothing wrong with Belgium.
No, absolutely. No.
Okay. So how did you decide to come here?
Because when my postdoctoral contract expired, I couldn't land another job in academia. And I started teaching in school, which was, to a certain extent, even rewarding. I learned a lot.
In a Belgian school?
Yes, in school. I learned a lot, but I've always dreamed of, coming back to academia. And finally, I was offered a position here in Malta.
Okay.
Not out of the blue. I applied because there was this call. And I was interviewed.
So the University of Malta would put a call online. How does it happen?
I tried twice.
Is there a sort of online bulletin board with different universities from around the world?
Well, there are several channels. For example, there are emails. There are calls being published on the university website as well.
Okay, so you
mostly it's also word of mouth because you get to know through other colleagues and friends of friends of friends and the like. And I applied twice actually.
Okay,
I tried once in 2010.
Uh-huh.
Right after my contract had expired, but it didn't go well. I didn't get the job. And then in 2012, I applied again because there was a second call. And finally, I was chosen and we thought about this together and we finally decided to relocate.
And had you been to Malta before you got the job?
No.
No. Was the very first time.
Yeah, so you arrived the first time and you coming off the plane.
We came a bit before
a few weeks before he was supposed to start working.
To find a place to rent.
And it was very difficult because I had a full-time job in a school with more than 120 students.
In Belgium.
So I had to find a way to get replaced and...
Yes.
It was much more difficult for her.
Okay, so first impressions when you first arrived in Malta, even for your, to find a place to live. And first impressions.
The first impression was a bit shocking, I have to say, because the first word that I read arriving... on the plane was Merba, which sounds very, very, very weird for a French-speaking person. Because it sounds like a rude word in French. Yes. So it was like, is this a good signal?
I didn't know this. How interesting.
But we say the no swear words.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes,
okay. I'm not mentioning.
Oh,
well,
I looked this up
French.
Though. But how interesting. Okay.
Obviously, I'm a primary school teacher. Yes. I know how to avoid and how to watch my language.
Yes, yes.
The weather.
Yeah.
Because
we arrived late at night.
Yes.
The moment we stepped out of the plane, it was so stifling hot. We said,
okay.
Exactly,
so
because in Belgium it was already like 5. Mm-hmm.
We were already wearing a jacket because at night it would be cold.
Yeah, and obviously northern Italy doesn't get this stifling hot either.
No.
I mean, maybe sometimes in Sicily.
It's warmer than Belgium.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say that we didn't choose, we weren't wise enough to choose a very good hotel.
Oops.
So we stayed at we spent the night in a hotel that was a bit nightmarish.
Okay.
So it was a shocking first experience, but we realized that it was just the wrong...
We're not going
Set
to mention.
Clothes.
We're not going to mention.
No,
hotel.
No, of course.
But nobody's going to get offended. We've heard these stories before. Was it dirty? What was wrong with it?
the AC wasn't working, and for example, we had booked our room. We were supposed to have a double bed, and instead, we were given twin beds separate.
Put together. Okay.
And we didn't complain about it. But for example, AC wasn't working, mm-hmm. and for us it was stifling hot.
So of course.
I asked the reception whether they could make it work, and remember this guy coming after quite a long time and started banging on the AC unit, swearing to no avail, and that was okay. not the very best impact.
No, okay.
But it's actually what I do now for making things work. And it functions perfectly.
No,
so
but
actually,
at the same time, and I'm saying that was a very, very bad, almost shocking impression.
Okay.
But at the same time, when the morning after, you find yourself in front of
the sea,
it's completely different.
So where did you stay when you first arrived?
In Slima.
Okay. Yes. So we've been having so much fun chatting to each other. The time is starting to run out. So we need to talk about your life in general in the last over 10 years that you've been here, how you've adapted, what it's been like, what are the best things about Malta? And then I will ask you, and don't be shy, it's fine, but what, in your opinion, are the worst things about living here? So let's start with, how has life been in the last 10, 12 years that you've been here?
Of course, life cannot be perfect all the time. We had difficulties at the beginning adapting, getting integrated, because this is absolutely normal. I don't believe anybody that says I got perfectly included in the local society from day one, because this is absolutely not possible.
Did you have any Italian friends here? Maybe
we have Italian friends, we have Maltese friends, we have French-speaking friends in my case.
I would say more Maltese friends than Italian friends.
Yes, definitely more Maltese.
But you build them up since you've arrived.
Yes, obviously. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And do you think that the friendship with the Maltese are said to be hospitable and very friendly, you know, did you find that?
We found a little bit of everything, because at the end of the day, Maltese, like Italians, we are human beings. You can stumble upon the wrong one, you can stumble upon a bunch of very, very good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we managed to have friendships, connections, and these 10 years have been globally very good. Otherwise, we wouldn't say that we want to stay here, we are settled here, and so on. Then we can see how the place is, which is amazingly beautiful. I would say
that Malta is a bit like those dishes, those sophisticated, refined dishes that you have to learn to appreciate. Something like, you know, for example, I like junk food, but what you get from junk food, you know that it's something that tastes good, but at the end of the day is not something that's going to last. I mean, quality-wise, not very good.
Not very
and then there are other recipes, other dishes that, you know, especially if you are used to eating junk food, you know, initially you don't realize how actually good it is. You have to learn.
It's an acquired taste.
Yes, it's an acquired taste. And
not,
I think that
not in my case. I think
in my case, Malta was like a dish that I had to learn how to appreciate. And now I really like it because it tastes so good. And I think here it's really, living in Malta is an asset because you have the privilege of living two completely different lifestyles. On the one hand, you can have a sort of international perspective without having the cons of living in a stressful big city, especially if you have, you know, to commute and the like. And at the same time, you can feel, you can really feel, experience and live what living in a small town is like.
Okay.
So in that case, you have these two different perspectives and they can coexist.
Okay. Anything you would change about Malta? I mean, the negatives?
Well, there are many things that that perhaps should be changed, but I wouldn't say that these are issues that you wouldn't find in other countries. Everyone knows about, you know, the construction craze and other things, but are we sure that it doesn't happen in other countries as well?
What about have you faced problems with bureaucracy and you know, getting paperwork?
Not really.
Honestly speaking, compared to Italy, Malta is a paradise.
Okay, fantastic. Malta is a paradise. Good to hear.
Well, it took me much longer to get an ID card, an Italian ID card, and to obtain
every
many
time I
documents
hear
in Malta.
A foreigner complaining about bureaucracy or something similar, I say, listen, do not set your feet in Italy, because there you will really experience the Kafka situation.
Yes, it's Kafkaesque in Italy, much more than in Malta.
To conclude, let's go back to your Italian roots and you being Italian, and if, as I asked you about music, and I know some of these questions are not fair because Italy is a big place and there are different types of Italian cultures in different parts of Italy. For example, with music, yeah, you know, southern music from the south of Italy, music from the north of Italy. But in general, you know, for example, if I had to ask about a book or a poem or a bit of literature that you would recommend to somebody to be introduced to Italy, what would you recommend?
In my case, I would stick to the region of Liguria, because it's very difficult to find something about the entire Italy which is not like Dante or Petrarca or the big names or Alessandro Manzoni. I would go for Ligurian poet Eugenio Montale, who's a Nobel Prize as well. And the book, the poems book, is Ossi di Seppia, Cuttlefish Bones, 1925. If you want to visit Liguria without going there, and if you want to have an idea, I mean a taste of how life in Italy was in the first decades of the last century, that book gives you all. And some of the landscape described are very similar to Malta as well.
Maybe a movie or TV program?
A movie that I would recommend. Paradoxically, I believe that a film which...
Pardon?
I'm sorry.
Oh, colpo
grosso. But paradoxically, I believe that a film which allows one to instinctively understand certain social, cultural, political dynamics in Italy is a horror film. A 1983 horror film directed by Pupi Avati, titled Zeder. In the United States, it was distributed under the title Revenge of the Dead to capitalize on the success of zombie movies.
Okay.
But it has very little to do with that subgenre. I don't want to spoil the plot for those who haven't seen it yet. But what is interesting about the movie is that actually I find this film useful for understanding Italy, because it shows a country where a sunny, carefree, postcard-like side coexists with a nocturnal, occult, and menacing one. Because I think that Italy has these two sides.
Oh.
And very often tourists tend to see only one. Mm-hmm. Because Italy, it's a country where ancient and modern blend, where the past often casts its shadow on the present, not always gloriously, but sometimes in an ominous and hostile manner, and where technology coexists with irrationality and superstition.
Ah.
And if you watch this film, you see that Italy is a country where Catholicism has never entirely replaced paganism, a country where certain uncomfortable truths must be buried at any cost, and the line between state and conspiracy is not always clear.
Okay, so that's the movie. Tell us the title once again.
Zeder, 1983, Pupi Avati.
So that in English would be Z-E-D-E-R.
Z-E-D-E-R, yes.
Okay,
fantastic. It's a family name, that's why.
So I like the fact that you've chosen alternative titles. And for example, you know, movies, there are so many famous Italian movies that have been shown around the world and won Oscars or whatever. But you've decided to show us a different aspect of Italy. And food that represents your culture, your country?
There's something that I really miss from my Liguria. I muscoli ripieni, stuffed mussels.
Stuffed mussels?
Yes. Or something which is really typical of the place where I come from, and they take a long time to get prepared.
Would one be able to find the recipe online?
Absolutely. Muscoli ripieni.
Muscoli ripieni.
Alla Ligure. Okay. Everyone knows about pizza, lasagna,
let's go for the... So your perspective, this perspective of Malta, but also a little bit about their background in Italy and also Belgium, this wonderful couple who have been the first to be invited on Minainen Baranin, Malta through International Eyes. It's been a great pleasure to have you on. Fabrizio Foni, Irene Incarico Stefanelli. Did I get that right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being my guests today.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. And a piacere, Colin.